The views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this podcast are solely that of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect that of RMB.
A very good day to you. I'm Howard Feldman. I head up marketing and people at Synthesis, and it is absolutely awesome to be joining you once again for another podcast. Joining me today is Natasha Peterson. She is the Human Capital Business Partner at RMB. Natasha, good day to you. How are you?
Hi, Howard. Good, thanks. So nice to see you again.
Nice to see you. So the background to this podcast is a conversation that Natasha and I had. We got together and we started chatting about some of the challenges that we are seeing in the workplace in the past, over the last 18 months, as well as currently, and the concerns around the future. Now, what is interesting is that in the United Kingdom, the percentage of adults experiencing symptoms of depression has doubled from 10 to 20%. In the United States, it's increased from 11% to 42%. What we're seeing as well is that younger people in these regions have been greatly impacted, with 56.2% of adults aged 18 to 24 reporting symptoms of anxiety and depression. So the increase has been tremendous. There's also growing evidence and growing concern that the next pandemic will be a mental health one, and that the worst might still be to come. It's common knowledge for people to be able to keep it together during times of crisis, but then, of course, let the guard down a little bit when the crisis is over. That is the context, that's the background, that is the concern. Natasha, welcome. I'd love your thoughts on all of it. Take us through some of your experiences.
Yeah, absolutely, Howard. Yeah, I mean, this is such a pertinent subject for me, and I feel so passionate about it, given that I've been working with this for quite some time. I must say my observations in the workplace is absolutely projecting what your research shows. We've seen an increase in anxiety levels, in mental health illnesses, depression, and I think dealing with it every day and then actually comparing it with my experience as a counselor, it is for me evident that it's a societal issue. It's definitely not an organizational issue only. Just to reflect back on during the first and second wave, I was a counselor and counseling for the South African Depression and Anxiety Group, and our call center numbers literally doubled during the pandemic on a weekly and monthly basis, which really is for me raising so much concern around people suffering from anxiety and depression, especially in this time. And I think there's so many things on a multifaceted level that is actually causing this. I think our employees in the organization and employees and people in society has literally gone through so much change during this pandemic that we are all going and working through these stages of grief, kind of making sense of our old world and accepting the new world. And I think the thing is that we are all waiting for the time that this will all pass. And the question is, how can we actually, despite the adversity, live our best lives? Because we've all been holding on to this point that we'll get to where everything is over. And I think I think that's a point of denial for all of us, thinking it will just be over in the next wave. So absolutely have seen that in the workplace, as well as with counseling with SADAG.
So, I mean, that's fascinating that you're seeing it reflected in the environment outside of a work environment, which is obviously significant. Yeah. What's interesting to me as well is that this has almost been a comorbidity or a pre-existing condition. It's not as though we were in tremendous shape at the start of the pandemic, were we?
100%. And I think the other thing is for me that I've seen past traumas being triggered during the pandemic. So where people have experienced depression, anxiety, or any form of mental illness previously, and it was underlying, it's almost as if the pandemic unveiled those underlying conditions. And on top of that, a lot of our people have experienced trauma previously, which could have been loss of a loved one and so forth. And I think that triggered the PTSD previously experienced because that was not dealt with. Like you said, we weren't in the best shape. And on top of that, we have a lot of burnt out employees before even the pandemic of the way we work and operate every day.
Yeah, so it's definitely come back. The other thing that you mentioned is that, and since we spoke, I've started observing it, is people are dealing during a time like this, suddenly something physical hits them, where whatever that vulnerability is, whether it's a bad back or whether it's migraines that they would suffer from normally, it's manifesting at this stage quite physically in our bodies.
Really. Absolutely. And I think with the Western culture we're living in, we sometimes forget how emotional responses trigger our physical responses. And we forget the whole mind-body concept of what is going on in my mind and the stories I tell myself and the fears and anxieties that I'm not dealing with is manifesting in my body. And often, like you just said, following our conversation, as I've explained to you, often what happens is that we have underlying physical anxieties that has not been triggered. We go into a pandemic, our anxiety levels, our fear levels become heightened, and that triggers our physical comorbidities. And often we see that people end up in the hospital with a physical illness, and that again could trigger your underlying mental illness. So we're now dealing with the whole being actually triggered and suffering. And on top of that, we have to deal with a pandemic and the fear of going into a hospital and being infected. So it's really all around a very challenging time for our employees and our society.
So what have you been doing to try and alleviate the stress, the anxiety, and assist people in coping with this?
So I think a big thing that we have been doing is education. So educating around what is it that my body what is it that I will be going through in this time? What are some of the thinking patterns that might manifest with me? So we started off with doing a lot of series around the stages of grief and how accepting the new norm is basically going through a period of grief. And making way for a new world and stop denying that the fact that things will go back to normal, because the reality of it, that things will never go back to normal. The way we work, the way we operate, everything has changed and it will remain changed. So I think the thing is that navigating through this and actually changing my mindset and the way I tell the stories to myself is a really big learning curve for everyone. So we've been doing a lot of webinars around the stages of grief and how do I bounce up, not back, because bouncing back is not going to work in this in these times. I need to tap into those resilient bones that I might have built previously due to trauma experiences. How do I activate that and then use it in my current circumstances? So we've been doing a lot of webinars around changing your story. How do I get myself being resilient, and how do I live my best life despite adversity? On top of that, we've also tapped into some mindfulness sessions, which we run on a daily basis, where you have an opportunity to just pause and, you know, just reflect and get your mind focused to self versus everything that's going on around you and the digital fatigue that's been caused during this time. And then I think one thing that I have seen evolve, which was quite it was quite beautiful to see, was the vulnerability of leadership and how this has really changed the way people see mental health and the conversations we can have. So we've really pushed a lot of connect sessions. So connecting on all levels. So we would bring
in us. What does that mean?
Yeah, so we would connect on all levels, meaning that we would bring in senior leadership and C-levels to actually come and speak to all employees. And we cluster smaller groups where the employees actually have an opportunity to share where they really are. And we bring in questions in this conversation like, how are you really doing? Not how are you doing, but how are you really doing? What has been challenging for you? What are some of the things that you need less of? Or what are some of the things you need more of? And with those, we encourage cameras being on. And we really try to connect and see and pick up on small nuances that show us that the person is not okay. And we've also been really driving the message with leadership. Speaking to employees saying, it's okay to not be okay. And we've had really, really nice and vulnerable sessions where our leadership share experiences they've been through, mental health struggles they've had.
Yeah, ask that, because it actually requires a tremendous commitment from leadership, doesn't it, to be vulnerable. And the way in which so many people have been trained in the corporate world, it's not really just corporate South Africa, is strength, confidence, being self-assured, vulnerability actually hasn't really been one of those factors that we've admired very much. In fact, we often confuse it with weakness.
100%. And that's the thing. And we really had to start modeling that vulnerability and working. And leaders had to really tap into themselves to be able to display this. And I mean, if you look at the works of Brené Brown, for example, and the research she's done on it, and how it increases connectedness and people feeling that sense of belonging. And so we've had our leaders really speak up saying, I've struggled before. This is what I've done. It's okay to not be okay. And through that, we've very organically seen that people come forward and share that they are not okay, tap into the resources we have, which we use ICAS as an organization, which is absolutely a saving grace in a time like this. And we offer these counseling sessions and counseling services and therapy to our employees. And we've seen an uptake in it when leadership is actually able to be vulnerable and say, you're not alone. And I've really seen this revolution around the more people start to share, the conversation goes from, I'm fine to, you know what, I'm really struggling. And I need my team to show up for me today, or I need my leader to be there for me.
But what an incredible thing if somebody can verbalize that instead of suffering in silence, becoming resentful, feeling alone and alienated. It's very powerful. With all of that, and these things are absolutely critical, at the same time, you've still got a business to run. How do you balance being understanding, accepting, making allowances with still actually demanding a high level of service? We live in a very competitive environment.
Mm-hmm. Sure. I mean, this is an interesting question. And if I can be vulnerable, just to say that it's a question that we have also been struggling with, especially in a culture like RMB and First Rand, where the care level is just so emphasized, and the emphasis on caring for employees. But yet, as you say, Howard, we have a business to run. So what we really had to ask ourselves, and this actually happened, especially in the third wave, because in my experience, the third wave was quite intense on people. We had to really ask ourselves, where can we stop? Where can we pause and put things on hold? And we really had to ask ourselves, can we afford the over and pushing for the over and above the business as usual? Because as you know, yourself, to be a performing organization, you have constantly have to push for the over and above. You cannot just remain status quo. And I think that it was a big discussion, and we're still in discussion. Where do we stop and where do we pause? And I think the advice that, if I can give advice to leaders, is prioritize for your employees what is important. Because at this point, yes.
I love that.
Yeah.
That is so great. It's so simple and so obvious.
It's so obvious.
We don't always do that.
We don't do that. And it's an interesting article I read on this. And I think what's interesting for me is for months, I kind of missed that very simple tip. because we need to remember we have plates, okay? And our plates get really full, emotional stress, we have business as usual, then add a pandemic. So we can assume that 80%, minimum 80% of people most likely does not have the capacity to carry additional stress in a time like this. So what they are looking to us to do is to tell them, this is priority, focus on this, because taking away that noise that they have to deal with will at least alleviate one part for them. So this is, for me, the advice that I could give leaders. Prioritize what is important now. Decide where you can start, stop, and continue. Which projects you can actually put aside. Because I can tell you now that employees are really, really going through a really tough time during this pandemic. It's been tough. There's been a lot of burnout cases. You need to realize that if you are going to push too hard for a very long time, you will very likely sit with an organization that's all burnt out and that will suffer with that post-traumatic stress disorder.
Absolutely right. How do you tell, what are the signs of burnout? What do we look for
Yeah, so that's an interesting one. And these are the nuances I was alluding to previously, and also something I very often try to educate my leaders on is the nuances and the signs of burnout. So you can pick that up by very abnormal behavior displayed by your employee. Like, for example, an employee who usually is quite calm and all of a sudden becomes quite irritable in their interactions. So anything out of character, you need to, as a leader, start asking, is there something I'm missing here? Because burnout is not something that all of a sudden just happens. It's a buildup of months. And your employee needs to be educated. So the things that we usually tell the employee, if you notice that you are losing appetite, or you may be overeating, or your sleep patterns are becoming abnormal, you're struggling to sleep, or you want to sleep too much, there's high fatigue levels. So anything that really shows up and makes you feel that I'm not myself. And it's almost like I describe it as this gut feeling of I'm not okay. And it's not that you are fluctuatingly not okay. You see a consistent pattern. And often also we see a disengagement. So an employee would often seem as if they are disgruntled, and a disgruntled employee, and you'd report them to HR as not wanting to do the work. However, they are suffering from a state of burnout most likely, or a mental health illness. So I think it's important to ask these questions when the individual does not start feeling like themselves on a really long period of time, and there's a disengagement of the employee.
Absolutely unbelievably interesting. When we started, I mentioned, and you agreed with the point that the concern is, or the data that you're seeing, is that we might be in a situation that the worst is still to come. Take me through what you're seeing, why you say that, and what that really means.
Absolutely. So the concern I'm sitting with at the moment, and again, I have not wrapped my head around it, and I think a lot of people are asking these questions, is that we are dealing with a society that has gone through so much trauma and grief. And you can probably assume that most of them have not dealt with it. So there's multiple facets of the trauma that will be left behind. People have gotten sick, they've contracted COVID, and they had to really face this question around, will I actually survive? Because our minds are geared currently to link the pandemic and the virus to mortality. So as soon as you contract the virus, you have these questions of, should I give my spouse my passwords? Because very likely something could happen to me. I could go into hospital and pass. So I think all of these questions come up, and it's a very traumatic event, and people don't always see it that way. And they heal and they continue with their lives. So here you deal with PTSD that will later transpire. And on top of that, people have lost so many loved ones. Not only have you experienced direct grief, but you also experience secondhand grief. We've all become social workers, Howard, as you would probably have gathered. We are consistently supporting everyone around us. We have friends and colleagues losing loved ones, and it creates this fear and these moments of loss that we don't necessarily deal with because there's so much else going on around us. I'm being a mother, I'm being a housekeeper, I'm being a cook, and I'm being an employee. So we don't have time to really process this. And the issue I have is that later on, there will be signs of post-traumatic stress disorder showing up because we never dealt with this. There's a meme going around that we can already see 2022, but we haven't even gotten over 2020. Yes, that's funny, but it's true. And that's the issue with the everlasting effects. We have to, and I urge organizations to ask the question of how will you deal with the fact that your organization will be suffering with PTSD for the months and years to come.
The concern actually are the organizations that haven't had the agility or don't have systems in place or a culture in place to deal with it. An organization that might be a little, what we would perceive as old-fashioned or a couple of years behind in this, I do worry for their employees and even for the well-being ultimately of the company, because it will impact, unfortunately.
Absolutely, Howard. It is a really big concern. And I mean, you can be thankful if you are an organization that actually advocates for mental health. I mean, RMB is in First Round is absolutely that. But I have also in the past worked for other organizations or seen other organizations that doesn't advocate as much. And we can assume that we also live in a society where mental health is a little bit taboo. We know that.
It's still there.
Many people see it, no matter how much we do actually advertise for it and advocate for it, many people still see it as a weakness. Until today, absolutely, they do see it. And it's a really big concern. And I think it's a question that as individuals, we need to ask ourselves, what am I not dealing with? And how many times am I actually pausing in a week to ask myself and just check in, am I okay? Am I actually surviving here? And it's actually really okay to not be, because many people are suffering.
Yeah. Who cares for the carers? Who cares for you? How do you manage? Where do you, you know, drawing the line, not actually being drawn into what is sometimes very, very traumatic incident?
No, it's a very good question. And I'll speak about myself just now. And I just want to actually say the caregivers are also our leaders. And I've noticed this, and also kind of an epiphany I've had in the last couple of weeks is that we so lean on our leadership to support and to check in. And the question is, who's checking in on the leaders? Because they not only have to carry themselves, but also employees. So again, if I can urge organizations to just check in and see what are the support mechanisms you have for your leaders, and don't forget or take them for granted, because they themselves are going through a lot of suffering and a lot of secondhand grief. Mm. So yes, I mean, it is, it's tough. There is something called compassion fatigue, and it absolutely happens. I actually experienced it after the second wave. I was counseling for SADAG at night, and then during the day, I would work with employees who no longer has conversations around their career aspirations, but now talks to me about their spouse losing a job or them losing a loved one due to COVID. So it definitely does have an impact. I think if I can be vulnerable, is that I also got to a stage where I had compassion fatigue, and I also felt that anxiety. Luckily, I am really geared up to notice the signs, and I'm really so thankful for it. And I made the decision to actually go and see a counselor to just debrief on the cases that I'm having to deal with, and the losses in the workplace and outside, and personally also losing a loved one. So I made the choice to actually go debrief on a weekly basis at one point with the trauma I'm dealing with. And I'm thankful that I have that open-mindedness to do it, because it can very easily fester in my body and go over into depression or a more serious mental health illness. So I think just being really aware of where your body is at, and you feel it, you listen to your body. When you are overly tired, when you find yourself in bed the whole weekend, ask yourself, am I really okay? And another thing that really energizes me is getting in nature. That's how I ground myself. So even if it's just going and taking a walk or going for a hike over the weekend, that is how I ground myself and just really pausing and asking myself, am I really okay?
Yeah, so I think the takeaway point there as well is carers need to be very, very careful around their own situation and find the thing. For you, it might be a walk in nature, going for a hike. For somebody else, it might be music, it might be dance, it might be something else. But find the thing that is actually just going to help you. We could talk about this for hours, but we are unfortunately out of time. Absolutely brilliant takeaways for me, and I applaud you for the work that you are doing, that RMB are doing. Just phenomenal stuff. And thank you for being so generous with your learnings, with your observations, and with your ideas. Natasha Peter, so thank you.
Thank you, Howard. It was a pleasure.
I'm Howard Feldman. This has been the Synthesis of Podcast. Join us as you always do for the next one. Don't forget to subscribe below, and you'll keep updated as to what we are continuing to talk about. Have a great day, and God bless.